We're here for our second weekly episode of Space Time, technically episode 7, but it's the second as we go weekly now. And we've landed on Friday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, to do these live. So we will be here every week, and then the episode will come out sometime after that on Friday afternoon. So thanks for hanging out and sticking with us. And this is an exciting week because we discussed last week how much stuff was coming in December. And now we get to discuss like how much has happened in the first week.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's been wild. So let's start off with space. Well, just to give you a preview, we're gonna talk about SpaceX Starship SN8 hop test, which we got to go out to Texas and see in person. NASA named the Artemis astronauts for the upcoming moon mission, and also there's some updates on how CRS-21 went. What's going on with SLS, the core stage at Stennis Space Center. And then we'll go through some of the news of the week at the very end and talk about some launches that are coming up. And by the way, at the top of this hour, so we're recording at noon Eastern, at 12:55 Eastern time, we should see a launch if it doesn't get scrubbed. So there's your pre-episode drama to see what happens is, we should see SpaceX launch a Sirius XM satellite, for their SXM-7 mission. So stay tuned to see if it happened or not. but first off, Seth, let's talk about CRS-21. We mentioned it last week. This is the Commercial Resupply Services mission, contract with NASA through SpaceX to supply, you know, cargo, food, science experiments, a bunk bed or a sleeping bag to the International Space Station. And this is the 21st of those missions, but it's the first with the Dragon 2 spacecraft. So let's recap what happened there.
Yeah, so this is so they launched on Sunday, Falcon 9 out of 39A, which actually is kind of new because they usually actually launch CRS contracts out of their Air Force Station launch pad called Space Launch Complex. We've been at SLC 40, but now they're launching them out of 39A.
And that'll be regular because of Dragon 2, right? They're going to be.
I believe so. I don't think there's anything physically holding them back because they could do it before at the other launch pad. But I think it's probably easier with the new design that, and then it adds more possibilities for, late load, capabilities as well to the,
cool. And just to give you a visual, you know, this is the launch pad with the black
deck. Fixed service structure that used to be part of the shuttle's fixed service structure, which reportedly possibly was part of the, umbilical tower for Apollo. Like, this thing has so much history on this pad, and it's great to see coming to it.
And now this is what when astronauts fly SpaceX, this is where they fly from.
Yes, and specifically, this is the first one of the first SpaceX for Phase 2 launched. The CRS Phase 2 contract included three contractors. There was Northrop Grumman, now previously Orbital ATK, now Northrop Grumman with their Cygnus, which launches out of Virginia. And then there was a newcomer, Sierra Nevada Corporation, with their Dream Chaser, which is launches on top of Vulcan, which is for debuting next year. So this is the first one for SpaceX. Northrop Grumman's been doing them since late last year, and Sierra Nevada should be starting sometime in the late 2021 or early 2022. So
cool, nice.
Yep.
And, you know, this was a really quick turnaround. We saw the launch happen successfully. We had, Daryl Sauce was out there shooting for Space Explorer. That was awesome. He got some really cool shots during the launch because there was, you know, press on site. We saw that they put up the Launch America, like vinyl graphic.
Yeah.
On the side of the vehicle assembly building. So you've got the American flag and then the blue and red, like NASA meatball logo. And then between that, you've got a building and now it has like in the shape of the ISS. Launch America. And that's meant for the commercial crew program where you're launching U.S. astronauts from America for the first time in, you know, 7-8 years. But it didn't quite make it for the demo mission, didn't make it for the Crew 1 mission. It'll be there for Crew 2. And it happened to be there during CRS-21. So that's cool. Then we saw so a successful launch, which is always...
Yeah, and about 24 hours later, we saw it dock then to the International Space Station. It actually docked for the first time at the International Docking Adapter 3 part of the International Space Station. So that's attached to push the, if you think of, if you, technically there's no up and down in space, but if you look at most pictures of the International Space Station, they're oriented where this will be on top of a space station.
Okay.
So it kind of did a little swing around up to the top of, swung around the front of the station to the top and docked pretty much right next to the Crew One, Dragon. And so there's some cool pictures of both of them there. And then, a cool time lapse that SpaceX showed of it kind of coming around to it and getting and seeing it.
The canonical orientation of the space station should be whatever it is with Lego, like with that model set.
Yeah, pretty much it should be. Yeah. So it is on top. Yeah. It's on top. It is on top. Yep. And then the Drift Crew One's right up front. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And there's been amazing pictures. Now, this is the first time that there's two SpaceX spacecrafts, in this case, Crew Dragon and Dragon 2, docked to the ISS. And there's been some amazing photos shot by the astronauts on board right now of just how cool that looks. It's really neat.
We should probably explain the difference between the Crew 1 Dragon and the CRS Dragon as well.
Yeah, speaking of Daryl Sasse, he wrote a fantastic story on Space Explored this week that goes through the differences of, you know, Cargo Dragon, as it were, Crew Dragon to take astronauts to space, and then Dragon 2, which is, it learns lessons from Crew Dragon. It's pretty much Crew Dragon, but you remove all the stuff that you don't need for cargo and a couple of the Avengers, right? But that you don't need. And you have a much better spacecraft.
Yeah, they removed like redundant life support systems, obviously anything to control the spacecraft, like no touchscreens, no seats. The Super Draco engines are removed since they're only used for aborting the rocket in case there's an issue with astronauts on board.
Cargo can't abort itself. So
can't abort itself. Maybe they could if they threw them on there, but there's no need for the extra weight and the extra. There's no lives on board, so we don't have to, they don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. And SpaceX published a really good picture of what it looks like inside of Dragon 2. And it kind of looks spacious. Like, I don't know if it was filled to capacity for this mission or what. But I mean, it's pretty much everything strapped into all sides of the spacecraft. Nope. And then there's room. I mean, I guess you don't want to have like a big trunk go up that you can't even like navigate. And there's so many factors like weight and then how much you're actually can send it up practically, but it looks pretty spacious, and I'm not sure what the comparison of the inside is like with Dragon 1 with Cargo Dragon, but in Daryl's article he had a lot of good details, including he did some cool interviews as we were recording last week out at Kennedy Space Center with some folks involved, and you even learned some things, like you mentioned how soon before liftoff do you have to have the doors closed before you can and add things, and there's a thing it goes from 5 hours, you got to be ready to go before liftoff to now 3, I think is the difference now. Yep. So that's pretty good. Which the ramification there is it can affect what you can put on, I suppose. So because you've got conditions that are shorter, so that's nice.
Yeah, there are certain things like food, different things they're doing experiments on that need that need to be loaded as late as possible. I think Cygnus still is better. I think Cygnus is like, it's still like way sooner. I don't know what the time is, but it's like, I think it's hours beforehand, like 2 or 3, 2 or 1 hour or something like that. Before.
Okay, because we're looking at 3 now, so maybe, and Cygnus is north of Grumman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that maybe 1, 2 hours, we'll look at that and see.
Well, their thing is like, they can literally put it on right before it launches. It's amazing. Like that's like one really great thing about Cygnus and Northrop Grumman's process.
Cool. And speaking of things that look great, we were talking about the way that the two Dragons docked to ISS looked awesome. SpaceX, we shot our own photos from the launch site and everything. Turned out, awesome. Daryl did a fantastic job. So did our colleague Jared, as he took shots this week. SpaceX did something a little bit different because they're SpaceX. And
they could do crazy things and they have the opportunity.
Yeah, they flew a helicopter around the Cape. Probably only SpaceX could in this case because it's their flight restriction, basically.
Pretty and much. I think they still have to keep a certain amount of miles out. But
yeah, I mean, for the pilot's safety, I'm sure, in the sake of the rocket. But they did tracking, and tracking is, you know, if the camera's in one position and it never moves and it's got a super wide view, then you can see the whole launch, but it's that everything's smaller. Tracking is much more zoomed in, and the camera, someone operates the camera as the rocket ascends and you track it. And so tracking on the ground is one challenge, because if you go too fast, you lose it. Or if you go too slow, you can't, you know, it moves up and down in the center of the frame, and it's not kind of makes you nauseous, but, tracking in a helicopter, we've been in a helicopter together for the sake of shooting photos on the Cape, and it's difficult. It's tricky. I mean, you have challenges like wind speed, even where the doors are moved on our helicopter ride, you know, or especially where the doors are moved on our helicopter ride, so we can have clear pictures without an obstructed window. You can't put your lens too far out there, and also, you know, in the back of your mind, part of your job is not falling out of the airplane or the helicopter. So,
that's true. Yeah, that's pretty important as well.
Yeah. So whoever did this tracking job, they did a phenomenal job. And it's that you see, it looks like SpaceX has released a couple of videos this week that looks, you know, kind of CGI, because it's so realistic.
Yeah.
Because it's real. It's like,
well, we're so used to seeing launches from ground level, you know, even with the official ones that they've sent, their cameras are still at ground level. Now we're seeing it from, like, you know, a couple thousand feet in the air, you know, pointed down at the launch, and then as it goes up. And I was trying to think about how they did this. They had to have someone with the side of the door open, because I've seen helicopters where they have the gimbal, like, on the nose of the helicopter, and they can put, like, cinema cameras on there and do cinema, you know, Hollywood movies with it. But you can't go super high, because then you see the rotors and you see that it locks out. They had to have someone out the side of it, because you can look up at it and there's no rotors or anything. Like, it's insane. Whatever they did,
crazy.
I want to see more.
Yeah. So CRS-21, the Falcon 9 rocket that launched, was tracked on video from the perspective of a helicopter, and it is awesome. It's really cool. So check that out. And also, we mentioned, you know, right now we're awaiting the launch of SpaceX's CXM-7 mission, and that is Sirius XM, so satellite radio. It's a new satellite to support that service. That's interesting. That's cool. Air Force released some really cool pictures earlier this year, back in October, of, like, everything arriving, and it's so cool, the detail of what they showed. That's awesome. What's really cool is that this is the first time a customer has opted to ride on a flight proven booster that will join the fleet leader. So in this case, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, SpaceX launched a booster that had flown six times prior to send their own Starlink internet satellites to orbit. And so it successfully completed seven flights. But if it hadn't completed seven flights, if six was the success and seven was a failure, then SpaceX would only lose their own product, and it wouldn't be that bad. In this case, if this booster doesn't complete its seventh flight, then they lose Sirius XM's satellite. And so we don't know the details, but it certainly stands out that they're using, you know, one of the fleet leaders now in the first stage boosters of the Falcon 9 rocket, for a customer's cargo. So we wouldn't expect this to happen with astronauts. Not for a very long time. We wouldn't expect it to happen with, like, national security missions, but a new satellite for this service, it's okay.
Yeah, we've seen over the years that, like, these, we call them flight proven boosters, because they're SpaceX calls them flight proven. Like, they are flight proven. They've flown before. They've been able to show that they can fly successfully up to seven times now. And so now, crew launches will now be reusing boosters as well, but they'll choose their own boosters and keep on reusing those boosters. And then national security launches have also now hopped on the train, be like, hey, yeah, you can start reusing boosters for these security missions. But for these life-leading boosters, I think it's 1049 and 1051 are the name of the serial numbers for these boosters that we track.
And it's like,
these are the life leaders, and they, every time they launch, we're just like, come on, just land one more time, just land one more time. Yeah. And so we're expecting this one to land, because, you know, we've already seen a seventh lone booster land, so we know they can do it.
Yeah. So the second seven time flown booster if successful, but the first 7-time flown booster for a customer payload, not SpaceX payload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first time. And so customers are now seeing that, yeah, flight-proofing boosters exist. Like,
we so we imagine either SiriusXM just has a lot of faith in this after seeing it done once, or they got a really good value on the price of launch because of the risk factor involved.
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah. So, again, that's, I think the liftoff time is, it's 12:55 Eastern time. And so we've still got, about
30, 40 minutes.
Yeah. A little bit.
Something like that.
How that goes. It's going to be fun to see. Now let's shift gears and talk about Space Launch System, because this week, the core state of Space Launch System. So the bulk of the rocket that lifts off is being tested at Stennis Space Center in South Mississippi. This week, NASA over the weekend began conducting what's called the wet dress rehearsal, where they begin fueling the rocket just for the sake of seeing, can we fuel this thing, have all the right factors in order, and not have any surprises when we actually go to launch this thing next year. And so wet, because it involves fuel, in this case, liquid oxygen.
Yep.
They did the test. There was some fuel delivered, just enough to determine that the temperature was not on target.
And now, so, this fuel, as in, this was hydrogen, right? Or oxygen?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So it's, but at some point, this, from what I listened to on the press call and everything, they emphasized that it was not an issue with the rocket itself, that no hardware change would need to be made, that it's an operational issue, and that. Mm-hmm. It's just workflow. It's not the actual hardware or material. And so they had to re-strategize and say, change how soon you fuel it, how much fuel you put through the line. You know, there's different variables they can play with there. And so they think they have an idea now of what they can do. Seemingly, the only way to execute it is to do it. And so they say that they'll begin the complete wet dress rehearsal starting next week. So that puts them about 1 week behind what they were hoping to do for this month, because they wanted to have wet dress rehearsal where they totally fuel the rocket and they see the data from it, they study it, and they say everything's fine. Now we can go on to the hot fire test where we actually fire the rocket core in place without it going anywhere and then study that data. They wanted 2 weeks in between that time. They've kind of lost a week in that. And so hot fire test was supposed to begin the week of December 20th. They've lost, they've lost 7 days. So maybe hot fire becomes the week of December 27th and they barely make the end of this year if they do. Or if there are any other surprises along the way, maybe the hot fire test slips into January. They want to have this rocket core stage delivered from Stennis Space Center to Kennedy Space Center, from South Mississippi to Central Florida by February. And so that they can begin assembling Space Launch System and Orion in time for a launch for Artemis 1, the first Artemis moon mission, no later than November 2021. So that's less than a year from now. Yeah. And so we're still in this green run test where it's the first time they've gone through all the steps of testing this new rocket core stage. They won't do this test next time for Artemis 2 and 3. Those are the ones that involve astronauts, because they're using the data from this test to say those are okay to go because we've made no changes in the configuration of the core stage itself. But we're looking at this closely because they need to get it done in December, maybe the first half of January, to have enough time to get it out the door in February as expected. And this is at a space center in South Mississippi where they've had issues with multiple storms coming in the path of the space center, where they have to secure the core stage and close off the B2 test stand where it's held, and people not come to work because they have to shelter from the storm.
Yeah.
And also back in March, there was a 6-week period or so where they literally couldn't do anything because of COVID. And we were all learning about, you know, what do you have to do for COVID-19 and how do we safely maneuver during this pandemic? And so there was 6 weeks there. I'd say there's probably been 2.5 months of lost time in 2020 between the pandemic and hurricane season at Stennis Space Center. So if they can get this thing out the door in February, ship it to the Cape and have this thing, you know, ready to go, I think it's possible we see Artemis 1 launch over the summer. I've seen emphasis from NASA on the November 2021 date being no later than. And so I think the earlier date is like, you could have this thing in October, September, August, you know, probably not likely given the pace of things, but we at least want to put a flag down on, you know, when does wet dress rehearsal complete? Give it a week and a half, 2 weeks. When does hot fire test complete, which will be epic? And then from there, do they reach their February target of getting this thing shipped out? Because if they don't do that, then all of a sudden that November 2021 date has to move back as well. And if you're looking at the big picture of Artemis, it's to Artemis 1, test the rocket on a lunar flyby mission to send Orion around the moon and back. Artemis 2, do that, but with astronauts. Artemis 3, do that, but with astronauts and a human landing system that takes the astronauts to the moon. So this is one big thing that has to happen before any of those other humongous things can happen. So we're closely watching. I care a lot about this because it's kind of in my backyard after having lived in South Mississippi for over a decade. And I really want to see this thing, you know, successful. So we'll see what happens.
Hopefully something. Yeah. I mean, we've been waiting for a very long time to see this thing launch. So
yep.
I'm waiting for it too.
Now, Seth.
Now, what'd you do Zach.
What did you do this week?
We'll see. We drove all the way from Louisiana or Mississippi here all the way to South Florida, deep South Florida.
South Texas. Yeah.
South Texas. Sorry. I keep saying South. I live in South Florida. I keep on thinking South Florida. Yeah, it's as far south as Fort Lauderdale, actually.
Yeah, we got to see Starship Serial Number 8 hop to its 12.5 kilometer altitude, and it was
so great. Like the being down here
for the week,
and like just watching it fly. Like I've been watching launches for like 3 years now, and seeing this one fly is like nothing like the other ones. It's so different, and it's so crazy, and it's amazing. It was so great.
I've been watching launches for a year, and this is kind of my anniversary of my first launch being. And
so everything you watch for the past year is thrown out the window.
Yeah, we actually so Starship, just to give background, is the in development rocket made by SpaceX, rocket and vehicle to do a few things. One is the possibility of point-to-point transportation on Earth, so you can go from New York to New Zealand in under an hour if you go by Starship. So you launch, you go around the world, you come back down. That's possible with this. The other thing is getting to the Moon and Mars with this vehicle using Super Heavy as the booster. We haven't seen that part yet, but Starship itself.
They've been building it. It's being built. Like they have rings all set up and they're building it.
And then finally, it's to deploy Starlink, which is SpaceX's satellite internet service that's being built out now, already available in select beta and select markets and coming to more places in 2021. With Falcon 9, SpaceX can send batches of up to 60 satellites to space for Starlink. With Starship, they can send batches of like up to 400. So it helps them reach their goal of having a full constellation much sooner. And so, you know, and that's also to say, NASA's investing because they've got the potential to use Starship as their human landing system. I'm very curious about that. So human landing system is what takes the astronauts from the Artemis or the Orion spacecraft in lunar orbit down to the surface of the moon. So that'd be via Starship, kind of like a moon elevator. And, we've got on that there's been three teams initially awarded, national team, which includes Blue Origin, led by Blue Origin, Dynetics, and then SpaceX. SpaceX having the least amount of funding through that, but
the craziest of them all.
NASA's been pretty clear. There was a while where Jim Bridenstine was saying, you know, NASA's administrator right now, it was saying, we're not going to roll out having all three be funded to completion if they meet certain criteria on the right timeline. Now they're saying, they think they're saying they have enough funds for one. They're going to necessarily roll out one of the three early next year, I believe, and they might be shooting for two. So it depends on a number of factors. I don't even want to guess which one gets.
I don't want either because it's I like them all, like they're all real cool, and this Starship, they have a variant of it even out there, they have like one nose cone painted white with the NASA one logo on it. So they're trying hard. This is a really big test for them too. There was NASA representation there. Like they had some NASA astronauts flying T-38s observing it from the air. We saw them buzz our hotel room a couple times, not just once. They were having fun out there in South Texas too. So
This was a very big deal. We got to, so I went out a week ago just to kind of see Starship SN8 in person up close. It was a possibility that it would have launched in the window that I was there. Didn't happen. Then we went back together, which splitting the drive was so much better than driving by myself. And, I think I lost count of days, maybe 4 or 5 days out there again. And, you know, again, we got to go out there, take pictures of the prototype, of Starship. You know, see where they build this thing out at their facility in Boca Chica, Texas. It's just right at the end of the tip of Texas, you know, and then there's the Gulf of Mexico and you can see Mexico itself. And we had a blast on the trip. The actual hop test, you viewed from the beach on South Padre Island. I viewed from the balcony of a hotel on South Padre Island to get that vantage point for our video capture. It was... I mean, talk about what you thought about the area and the viewing experience and just how you felt that day.
Yeah, this area is very quiet, very laid back. We were speaking with some of the locals and like, yeah, if you like doing nothing, like come here, which is kind of weird because we just saw a rocket fly. And I'm like, what do you mean do nothing? Like they just had the craziest thing I've ever seen in the world happen here. But yeah, no, like my lease ends in like January. I'm looking at a new place to live. Like I'm thinking about Florida, thinking about here. Like I don't know, man. Like I know anymore. Like it's crazy. Like real laid back, great Italian restaurant that we went to twice. You couldn't get enough of it. But
we got word that Elon is officially moving to Texas.
Elon's officially moving to Texas. I mean, we might as well all hop on the train and all move here. I mean, obviously, but it's crazy how close you can get. And how one, I'm a photographer as well, and I got some crazy sunset photos of before it launched. Like I don't know what is up with Texas, but the sunsets just look different. The colors are just so crazy.
It helps having a rocket in the foreground too.
It does really help that
when you can frame the sunset under the engines as if it's taking off. On the stand,
it's insane. It looks really cool. Insane, and even as it goes under, just the whole sky is just red. So it was really cool to just. It's beautiful down here.
Yep,
absolutely beautiful.
Yep. So, and then what about viewing on the beach on South Padre Island?
Yeah, there was a good crowd there. A little bit more than with COVID and all that stuff. Like probably a little bit more than there should have been, but
everyone wearing masks.
People were wearing masks, and we were all kind of staying apart. Like we're all the other media that showed up. We were all like, we know the drill, like 6 feet apart. Everyone set up separately, and we'll try to just stay away from each other at least. Regulars come and go as they go, but we're about 5 miles away, a little less than that, I think. Probably the closest you can get. I don't know. I can't imagine a super heavy us being all to be that close because I mean. Like you could just see it. Like anywhere you go where there's flat land, you can just see this shiny piece of metal just sitting there. And there's really no bad viewing place in the house, but right there it was like you could see the entire launch mount. It goes up, you can see everything of it, So it was stoked. I have like so little words. After it happened, I was tweeting out like my photos real quick to get them out as fast as possible, pretty much. And, on Twitter, when the little placeholder text is what's happening, I go, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. Right? The only thing I think of was just like, we are going to Mars. It's the only thing I think of at the moment. And just tweet that.
Yeah. So for myself, coming from the vantage point of the hotel, we were on the 9th floor, had a balcony view. We had fun kind of assembling our last minute setup of, my M1 MacBook Air. With a cam link to capture the Canon video camera and an extension cord, so it all reaches to the balcony, and like a 50-foot HDMI cable, so there's no risk of like not having enough room. I was able to work from my MacBook Air in the hotel room all day with the camcorder on the balcony, filming for 5 hours or streaming for 5 hours, and then right before it was time for liftoff, go out there and begin doing camcorder tracking, and then you gave me. an attachment for the tripod that held my iPhone 12 Pro Max on the same perspective as the camcorder. So as I tracked the rocket with, I don't know what it was, like 50x zoom, 5 miles away, then also I was filming from the iPhone, but not, you know, targeting on that one. It was just, it just happened to move as I moved the camcorder. And that video has seen, it's had more views than the camcorder video, because there's, I think because there's a lot of camcorder videos where it's like super zoomed in.
Everyone there had like, you know, massive telescopic lenses or telescopes, and the wide angle is a little bit different because that's what it saw. Like
It's like, and I was doing 2.5x zoom, so I think it's the equivalent of 65 millimeters on a lens. And you know, it's as, it's what you see with your eyes, basically. You know, if you put that on a big screen, it's what you see with your eyes. And it also did a good job. Both of them, I was proud of, did a good job of capturing the crowd reaction in town.
even at the hotel room, just all the cheering from the balconies. Like,
I think I've got this pool connected in a way that I can play it with sound. So I want to play a quick clip of what came from that. If you're watching the video, this is the zoomed in footage, but it's the same sound as the iPhone footage. So let's see what we get. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Cool. Nice. So this is it blew up.
Yeah, so we should definitely talk about the whole like process of what happened. So like it starts vertically, obviously, and it launched up with all three of its engines. There's three Raptor engines on it. It flew up. It was filmed almost to the brim, like as much as it could be with those engines. So it was a slow takeoff, one of the slowest takeoffs I've ever seen. And I'm sitting there just like taking off, like, did it abort? And then it just starts slowly going up. And as it went up, it actually like, it kind of like cut off its engines as it went. And as it made it to 12.5 kilometers, it finally cut off and it just started falling. Skydiver mode with its four kind of like aerodynamic surfaces to control it and reorient itself as it comes down. Yeah, and so pretty much it's come down. You can't land like this, obviously. So what we saw in the video was the last minute ignite its engines, flip it back, and then try to get it vertically to land. So obviously, it did it. Like that's the one. Like after did a controlled like flight downward, it says like, okay, anything happens goes, like we don't know, like we were expected hopefully to get to this point.
Yeah,
we don't know if we can relight those engines, like we don't know if we can even flip it vertically, we don't know if we can land it. So
very much a demonstration of a theory, not doing something that's been done before over.
And that's the thing, everyone was like, no, that can't work, there's no way, it looks too crazy. They did it and it looked easy, like to them. Like it just flipped almost perfectly vertical. And Elon tweeted out that there was like a lower pressure in one of the header tanks. And they have these two header tanks that are smaller than the larger tanks. And they use those to reignite those engines just because they don't want air bubbles.
They called this a success because they did take off. They did reach high altitude for the first time. They went to 12.5 kilometers versus 100 meters before. Way different. That thing, it was in the air for how long was it?
Minutes. Like it's so long. Like
like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. Like most launches after like 2 minutes, you're kind of like, it's gone. Like can't see it. You can't see it anymore. Yeah. For this one, I could just sit back.
It was so graceful. It was just like everyone, even with my tracking, I pushed down too hard, too fast because I thought I was going to keep up with it. And then I had to adjust. And that's, everybody did that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hilarious to watch. Just like the entire reaction was just like, is it happening? It's happening.
Right. Yeah. And then to take off was a success, to reach high altitude was a success, to descend was a success, to reorient, to orient itself in the belly flop position, to slow itself down was a success, to reorient itself for the landing position. So completing the landing maneuver was a success. Everything but landing, which was explosive, they call it, you know, as you know, a ride, yeah. A rapid unscheduled disassembly.
Disassembly. Yeah.
Yeah. And from that, they got the data they need to apply changes to Starship serial number 9 and 10. And we expect those could land, you know, we know now that they can launch, you know, complete their maneuvers and approach landing and almost the right spot. So when you think about it,
like the new thing to them was the whole like belly flopping and like, I think they got landing flip maneuver.
Yeah. Landing flip maneuver.
Like, and they nailed those two things. Like they nailed the
it goes vertical to horizontal to vertical again.
Yeah, and they got that. Like, all they have to do now is vertically land a booster, which they have been doing for years now. So, if they can do it. Like, there's
they can definitely
after
do that.
I watched it, I just, like, after I sat back, like, we could do it. Like, or they can do it. Like,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so, that's awesome. There's a little bit of uncertainty with Starship SN8. SN8 is, blown to smithereens. There's some parts of this thing that's still frame, you know, left abound. You know, there's
a big part of the nose cone. Elon tweeted that the nose cone survived and some other scrap metal, the nose cone survived. And Elon tweeted that someone suggested to keep it for, you know, as a memorial, and he was totally down for that. Which usually, like, when Elon says something like that, it's pretty much going to happen. So
yeah, I think it was our friend Gene from Space Padre on Twitter. So that's awesome. With SN9 just today, Friday morning, there was an incident where, you know, we've seen that. I saw that a week ago. You saw this past weekend where SN9 is fully stacked and it's in the high bay hangar at the building facility. And there was even a road closure to transport it on Monday. So the idea being in just a few days.
Yeah.
One for Monday. So the latest today was that on Monday it would be transported to the launch site, and so it would be there just like you saw SN8 as it awaits liftoff. And there was an incident where the stand that holds the rocket in place
seems to have
given way.
It leaned over, and we don't know anything about it. SpaceX hasn't said anything about it. Hopefully there were no injuries. That's like one thing I was thinking back in my head. Like,
yeah, number one, we don't want anyone to get hurt from this giant stainless steel structure.
Yeah.
Next, we hope that SN9 isn't out of commission now, because it has taken some level of damage. We don't know what yet. That will have to be assessed, whether it can be corrected or not. It's possible that SN9 might not get to fly. We don't know that yet, there is a possibility that we go from SN8 to SN10 in terms of flights, which in my mind, I just think to Windows 8 to Windows 10 and iPhone 8 to iPhone 10, and there were never nines. never nines. So
it's all a conspiracy. No one likes nine.
No nines. Yeah. So, but, you know, I hope that SN9 can fly, because the understanding that we all had was this would be rolled out soon, you know, by Monday. And possibly even fly before the end of the month. And that would be so good to demonstrate what they're trying to do, which is we can launch, we can do the belly flop maneuver, we can do the landing flip maneuver, and we can land. Because there was some unfair coverage, and you know, it's to have insight on this helps so much. If you see this thing, if all you see is the crash and you're like, oh no, something bad happened. But to know the context, you know that this was actually not just, you know, Elon Musk brain, but in, you know, U.S. space program, you know, era mindset, it's a success, because what they've demonstrated is the belly flop maneuver and the landing flip maneuver. And, you know, that was a success. And we, like you said, we know that they can land boosters. So, you know, there was like one mainstream news outlet really just did, you know, there's being insightful about it and knowing exactly what's happening. There's not knowing and just showing raw materials. And then I think there's this other category, which is sort of taking advantage of the situation and trying to be misleading in a photo and a headline to generate traffic.
It wasn't even the right rocket that exploded. Like,
yeah, there was a couple of instances, really bad situation like that. So, but you know, there were some major news outlets that got it right too. You know, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think BBC nailed it. I think CNN did a pretty good, did a good job. You know, their perspective was SpaceX just crashed a rocket. Elon Musk says it's still a success, and it's like, you know, that's a compelling headline. But to say, you know, SpaceX had their rocket exploded, no people were on board. It's like that. Well, true. Well, true. That was never the plan.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't give you confidence in the and modern rocketry if you're misleading that way. And so, you know, it's too bad. But so to be able to demonstrate SN9 with a landing so soon would just be a total flex. It's super sad what happened today where the stand collapsed and it shifted to, you know, toward the right and maybe hit the side of the building. We don't know yet what the details are there and what the extent of any effect it might cause will be. But, you know, we'll find out. We'll report as soon as we know. That was awesome.
Though it's good though. This is the whole point of building out a stainless steel. They're cheaper. They're quicker to build. SN10 isn't far along as SN9 is.
Yeah.
But it's like weeks away probably. So.
And they're even talking like SN16 in terms of design and like roadmap and everything.
Yeah, so they've already seen SN16. They've already, Super Heavy Artery's out there. They're in the 50s, I think, for Raptors. Like they're building them real quick.
Yeah. So really quick, I want to play one more thing from video. I think. This captures a little bit more of the ending. So this is from SN8 before we move on from this. So. Or 16,
yeah.
Oops.
I wish that video was angled a little bit more to the right because you can see the alien on the rooftop.
Yeah, at the very beginning, you can see an alien on the roof.
Yeah, someone on that roof just put an alien up there, which is hilarious.
Yeah, an inflatable green man. I didn't plan on doing any launch commentary at all. Oftentimes I'll do that where like, I don't expect to do any kind of excitement. You know, I just want to really be professional and have it be the raw footage. And it's impossible. That was just, I had to add that in there. And I'm so glad I did because some people really appreciated the context added to the video alone. So it isn't like, you know, Godzilla style, some big explosion in the distance and you don't know what happened, you know, like Cloverfield or something. So, that was awesome. We will be back for SN10, I imagine. I think that's kind of our goal.
Our goal is either that or the next orbital launch. I don't know. Like we'll be back. I guarantee. Yeah. We've already planned out a better stay and how we're going to do it better.
So. We're quite addicted and you know, spaceexplorer.com has had me traveling more, you know, safely, but traveling more in a year where I have less traveling to do for fun. And, it makes the world seem smaller in a good way. You know, it makes distant things seem accessible. So it's been really fun doing that. We're 10 minutes away from liftoff, for SXM7. So we'll see how that goes in 10 minutes. When we get closer, I'll pull in the video for that. Quickly, let's go through some headlines from this week, Seth. So, back in like August and September.
Oh God, it felt like it was so long ago.
There was the NROL-44 mission. That's the National Reconnaissance Office Laboratory 44. The numbers are not subsequent. It's kind of a random number assigned to the mission for whatever reason.
Yeah.
United Launch Alliance was to fly their Delta IV Heavy rocket, which has three core stages, and then the payload, so it has enough thrust to get whatever this massive heavy spy satellite is into space, mm-hmm. into orbit. Didn't happen the first time. Didn't happen the second time. They took off a few months, or they looked at everything they needed to fix.
Had to put some serious money into that old launch. This is an old rocket. This was designed back in, I think, the 80s, I think, or even 70s. So this is an old rocket. It goes back to the heritage goes back to the Thor rocket, which was one of the original medium-range ballistic missiles that turned into a launcher. Like, this is an old, old rocket.
Yeah, so it dates back to ballistic missiles. So,
yeah.
Okay. So it didn't happen the first two attempts, you know, and we were going out there for Space Explored with a window of like 12 to 3 a.m. And so we'd meet up at like 10 p.m. and position it, you know, and everything, and put out remote cameras at the Apollo 1 launch site and Memorial. It was a lot of work, and we never got, we got some really cool pictures of a Delta IV Heavy. But we never got to the launch. We decided to stay in South Texas and on South Padre Island and Boca Chica to see the Starship potential test flight and risk missing this Delta IV Heavy that has burned us so many times.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we had two colleagues, Daryl Sauce and Jared Bass, who were both on the Space Coast, and they got to go in our place. And I know for Daryl, it was his first Delta IV Heavy launch. I imagine for Jared, it might be as well. It would have been for me. It would have been, what, your second?
My second, yeah.
Yeah, and there's only...
I got to see Parker Solo Probe like 3 years ago.
Yeah, and there's only like 3 days to go, one of which is on the West Coast at Vandenberg. So I got to catch like maybe one of the two that comes from Kennedy. But it was worth seeing Starship instead. But that actually launched, and as far as we know, it's a classified mission, and they stopped covering it soon after the liftoff.
Yeah,
but
we got confirmation from Tori. He said, I think it was like 142, I think. That's usually, he'll always tweet out the number of how many launches they've done. So that's, yeah, it's confirmation that it was successful. So,
yeah, successful.
Whatever launches, it's doing, it's doing. So, yeah.
next up is the National Space Council convened for their eighth and final meeting of the Trump administration. Where Vice President Mike Pence leads, and they use that to introduce new space policy, which is heavily geared toward national security and quantifying international threat, namely Russia and China. It got a bit dark. It got a bit dark in this period.
It got a little dark. We were all kind of celebrating China's success in the moon landing, and they kind of went the opposite way in the meaning that it was more of a threat than we should all be happy for them, you can, whatever you want to view it,
way. Eventually we get to the part where Vice President Mike Pence introduces NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, and Jim Bridenstine says, we're going to announce the first cadre of Artemis astronauts, so astronauts who will train to go on these lunar missions. I imagine this means Artemis 2 and 3, 2 being the lunar flyby. How many folks per mission? Is it four?
Or is it two? It's three or four.
Three or four, okay.
Two. I think it's going to be four. I think they can launch four. I don't know if they're going to be launching four in the first one.
Right, okay. So they've got a list of 18 names of current astronauts. So as recent as the class of 2020 astronauts, we'll get a 2021 class, I guess, pretty soon here. But they picked 18 names of folks, and many of these names I'm familiar with from covering space for the past year. Victor Glover is one who he's part of Crew One, SpaceX Crew One, so he's on the International Space Station right now. He's in orbit, and so he's on this list. Who are some other names? You know, you can see the full list on Space Explored. But
yeah, there's Christina Cook was one of them that we've seen before that came back from the ISS.
Yeah, Christina Cook is part of history already because she completed the first all-female spacewalk. She was part of that. So
Jessica Mayer is up there as well.
Same situation.
Who's also currently up there on the space station. I'm super excited to see Victor Glover and Christina Cook go. Like, I want them to go on the same mission. They're two astronauts who love space and just love that they get to go to space for a living. Their emotions and their the way to talk about it are just amazing.
Christina Cook, when the pandemic was like first inset, you know, she'd gotten back from the space station. You know, she was doing these live Instagram videos on schedule every day to read children's books, and I would like pull it up, you know, at the moment that it was airing and show my kids, and it was just so neat. It's like she's come back from space. she's a really good communicator.
I love her. Like her and Victor Glover is currently up there, his first space flight. And he's just like, every time you see him, like I watched, he did a Q&A with kids on Facebook. Every time he was up there, he couldn't stop playing with the microphone. Like he kept on playing with it in zero gravity, and you're grabbing and talking, and keep playing with it again. Like you can't stop, and I love it.
Yep. So there's that. And there was a little bit of,
Name chases.
What's that?
They had some name changes too to some bases as well during the meeting as
oh,
well.
Oh, that's true. They changed the name of Patrick Air Force Base to Patrick Space Force Base, and then Cape Canaveral
Air Force Station.
Air Force Station is now Space Force Station. Cape Canaveral Space Force Station.
That's official. Yeah, it's official now. I mean, most people who are there are part of the Space Force. So I guess none of us didn't see it coming. So now it's just official.
Yeah, we've expected that for a while. Now it's official. And there was a little bit of pushback on this whole announcing the names thing now. You know, and press calls I've been in lately, a lot of people in the media, myself included, have wondered, when are you going to announce the names of the astronauts who will go to the moon? This was 6 months ago, you know, for example, when they were doing press calls on Artemis. And the idea is usually you've got a 2-year lead up so that there's proper training. Right now, even as recently as last week, before they made this announcement, they said part of the holdup was they have to determine which human landing systems they will use. So again, going back to whether it's National Team with Blue Origin, Dynetics, or SpaceX Starship. And so they need to know the specifics of that before they can train for that aspect of it. But there's a lot more that they can do with Orion and just in general. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that question was asked 6 months ago. It was asked again this week on an Artemis briefing. Then at the end of the week, they actually announced the name. So clearly it's been in the works for a little while. They knew it was coming. It was just planned for this National Space Council meeting. Okay, we got the 18 names. It's subject to change because it's you know, the last kind of space policy. You know, there was like literal space policy that was announced from the Trump administration. And then there was this, and it's not it can be changed in the future. Now, I think that you don't want to remove names from the list. You might add new names to the list. Mm-hmm. And you could make the final selection from the new category, but I don't think you'd want to.
Usually, there's
remove no someone.
Yeah, heavy names. Space has been fairly bipartisan for a while.
Now, so
I don't think coming in here and say no, we're not having any of these people. We want to pick our own. They probably won't do that.
I mean, there are a number of names that if we can recognize them, they're good choices. So, what I do think could change is that last minute national space policy that was put into effect. Maybe that could be tweaked or adjusted if viewed necessary. Maybe it's not. Moving on from that, SpaceX received an award from the Federal Communications Commission (FCC) to from the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund, upwards of $885 million. This helps them fund build out infrastructure for Starlink. They have to also meet certain criteria. So they have to, you know, the idea is they can't just, they don't just get, you know, nearly $1 billion for Starlink. They have to distribute Starlink in the right places in underserved communities across the U.S. where there is an access to, you know, broadband.
I don't want to cut you off, but we're 1 minute away from the launch.
Okay. 1 minute. Let's
I'll pull it in. That over.
Okay, let's do that. All right.
Awesome.
So I'll speak. We're 30 seconds. I'll speak over that. But basically, if they fulfill their needs for Starlink, they'll have this.
Oh, funding. They held.
Okay, held at 30. So yep. we'll leave that on for a few minutes and see what happens there.
Yeah. Feel free to mute the audio. You can figure it out.
Okay.
So they did. SpaceX got like $885 billion for funding for their Starlink constellation, which is mm-hmm. way more funding than they were getting from Elon, which is awesome.
Sure, it's almost $1 billion. So that's awesome. Next up is Boeing. So last December, Boeing attempted its first orbital flight test for Starliner, its spacecraft to send astronauts to the International Space Station on top of a United Launch Alliance rocket. They did not successfully complete their first orbital flight test. Starliner got lost, and then they did recover it, which was good, but it did not reach the International Space Station. They NASA required a big review. Boeing decided that they would refly this at their own expense, so no cost to taxpayers. Now they have a date for orbital flight test 2 with Starliner. It's March 29th, which is around the same time as Crew 2 SpaceX. So the bigger context here is that NASA has commercial crew program where in lieu of having no space shuttle and not wanting to rely on Russia and their Soyuz rockets and paying $1 million a seat, they rely on commercial partners within the U.S. to pay to send astronauts to the space station. So it's best for U.S. space companies. SpaceX yep. demonstrated that they could send their Dragon spacecraft to the space station with no crew on board. They demonstrated that they could send astronauts to the space station and recover the astronauts through splashdown in the Gulf of Mexico. They've even completed the first half of an operational flight with four astronauts, including a JAXA astronaut from Japan. And in 5.5 months, we'll see them come back. That's their progress. Boeing is the other partner in commercial crew, so SpaceX and Boeing. And mm-hmm. Boeing did not successfully complete their orbital flight test. They're now redoing that.
Yes.
Then they can do their demonstration flight. Then they can be operational. And so it's possible we'll see Crew 4 before we see the first Starliner Boeing operational crew. Flight. Yeah,
yeah, Boeing. So crew. They have to do OFT-2, then they have to do CFT, crew flight test, and then yeah. they have to do the first operational one.
Yeah.
The little recap on like what specifically went wrong was they had a timer issue in the Starliner. Dude, they just to put it bluntly, they could have caught it. They didn't do enough testing for it, and sure. they didn't catch it. So, and so when it launched, when it got into orbit, it thought it was a different part of its mission clock. So it was doing different types of maneuvers and burned too much fuel for it to get into the right orbit. So they had to, give it to Boeing. They did some great work to actually save the capsule. Of course, if there would have been crew on it, they wouldn't have been able to solve this problem easily.
Yeah, that would they emphasize that if crew were on board, they could have flown to the space station.
They don't know they would have flown to the space station, but they could have. It would have been recoverable, you know, just fine. So
they think they would have detected the problem sooner. But that's
yep.
all moot because the idea is just to send this thing uncrewed.
Yeah, technically, the whole process is supposed to be automated. So yeah.
and it's the kind of problem where like it didn't blow up. So that's good. No one would have died. So it's not it's in software, but at large, it's in quality testing and quality assurance. And that's what needed to be resolved. And they've taken over a year to do that. And now they're kind of back to where they were in December 2019. But it's good that this is all being done. And as Boeing emphasizes, it's at no cost to the taxpayer. So if NASA were funding the reflight, then taxpayers would be on the line for Boeing's mishap. But in this case, NASA is not. Boeing's paying for it entirely. So all well there. Looks like we got a 15-minute reset on the launch.
Yeah, maybe they're very close to the end of the window. So
I think they might have just lost their window because I see that they've
yeah. It looks like they yeah. I just saw on Twitter people are tweeting scrub. So yeah.
No launch today. We'll talk about what happens with SXM-7 and the first 7-time flight proven booster on a customer
commercial.
Yeah, flight next week. We'll see what happens then. But today, no launch. Maybe we'll see this tomorrow in person.
maybe. We're
making
it.
That's time. Awesome. Yep. All right. Talk a bit about Chuck Yeager. He passed away this week. I believe it was in his mid 90s.
Chuck Yeager. So a legendary pilot, General Chuck Yeager. He was a test pilot for the Air Force, as well as I believe the Army Air Corps before it was part of the Air Force. He was the first pilot to break the speed of sound. He flew on the Bell X-1, which was the predecessor to the more famous X-15, which was used by NASA astronauts to kind of get a feel for weightlessness and high altitude mm-hmm. flight tests. He passed away. He was a legendary pilot. I think he flew over 140 different aircraft. The name of his aircraft was Glamorous Glennis, after his wife, I believe. And that name carried on to almost every plane he flew. So amazing man. It's really sad to see him pass, a legend like that, and not no longer with us. So.
Yep. So NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine spoke a bit about this in a statement released through NASA, saying that NASA owes much to his brilliant contributions in aerospace. It's nice. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Chuck Yeager, if we see his name somewhere.
I believe they somewhere. Said in the meeting that a new future Space Force installation will possibly be named after him. So
yeah, they say will be renamed, I believe, or named after him. So we'll, yeah, so that's yeah. That's nice. Not only broke the speed of sound the first time, but then broke his own record at Mach 2.44. So
he was a legend. Yeah,
incredibly impressive.
Also, what something I learned from Amy Shear Tidal, which we had on mm-hmm. a few weeks back, she did a whole post on him. with Jackie Cochran, who is also a legendary aviator on, who's a female. And he was a very close friend with her and helped her train on the T-38s, which we've seen fly for a long time, and was a big close friend and colleague to her as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, and a new segment I want to call Aliens Exist. Let's talk about the former Israeli space security chief. He claims that aliens exist and are in hiding. And I don't know why you're laughing. He says that humanity is not ready for them to reveal themselves yet. He claims that they've been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we all generally understand what space and spaceships are. Trump was on the verge of revealing that aliens exist, but the aliens in the Galactic Federation are saying, wait, let people calm down first. So,
I mean, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be laughing because they're probably listening to this.
So. That's the claim. He says there's an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. They signed a contract with us to do experiments here, talking about Israel. They, too, are researching and trying to understand the whole fabric of the universe, and they want us as helpers. He also says that he says they went as far as to say that humans have already visited Mars, that there's a base located on Mars, quote, where their representatives are, and also are American astronauts. So what do we know?
I'm so curious. How did we get them there?
What do we know?
I don't know. We obviously don't know. We don't know anything compared to the great beings and the aliens. This is actually a kind of interesting theory that I did hear about like a while, like years ago, that there is intelligent life out there, but they've seen us and we're not smart enough yet for them. Or there's actually another even scarier theory that that we're going to be at war with an alien life because we send military personnel to space. So that might be seen as a invasion. So I don't know, but
you know how we have Space Force? We need like the State Department, like Secretary of State equivalent.
Secretary of Space.
Like diplomacy in space, so, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Ambassador to the universe.
That's this week in hashtag aliens exist. More next week. if we're ready.
If we're ready for them.
Yeah, finally in our section, launches to watch this month. I had SXM-7 as earlier today, but as we decided, scrub, so if you're listening now, you may have time to see SpaceX launch Sirius XM's 7th satellite of this current generation that they're on. Maybe tomorrow. I'm not sure when the backup date for that is, but maybe on Saturday.
I believe it's tomorrow, yes.
Yep, we learned that we've got confirmation that Astra will attempt to reach orbit for the first time on their third attempt sometime this month. Blue Origin, I can report, will have a flight later this month. It'll be the 14th flight of Blue Shepard. This is the rocket New Shepard. This is the rocket that goes to the edge of space, Kármán line, and comes right back. And Virgin Orbit, Virgin Galactic both have test flights this month. And Space Launch System may have a hot fire test this month. We'll know more on that.
Lots of question marks.
Next week. Yes. And that is this week's SpaceTime podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify. We are on Overcast. I think we're on Google Podcasts as of last week, as of Seth's recommendation. Me coming from the 95 Mac world, you know, branching out there.
There are people with Android out there. We love them.
That are in hiding because we aren't smart enough. We're not ready. And as ever, we will be back next. Bye, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
See you.